Babar the Elephant. Phoenix had been colonized before the colonial union stopped accepting colonists from wealthy countries. There was a large French population from which Bhutan was descended. Babar was a popular children's character on Phoenix, along with Asterix, Tintin, and the Silly Man, reminders of childhoods on a planet so distant from Phoenix that no one thought much about it. Zoe had never seen an elephant in real life. Very few of them ever made it into space. But she had nonetheless been delighted with the Babar when Cheryl gave it to her on her fourth birthday. After Cheryl died, Zoe made Babar a totem. She refused to go anywhere without it. He remembered Zoe crying for it while he was dropping her off at Helene Green's apartment, as he prepared to travel to Phoenix for several weeks of late-stage testing work. He was already late for the shuttle. He had no time to get it. He finally settled her down by promising to find her a Celeste for her Babar. Placated, she gave him a kiss and went into Kay Green's room to play with her friend. He then promptly forgot about Babar and Celeste until the day he was scheduled to return to Omaha and Covel. He was thinking of some reasonable excuse to explain why he was coming home empty-handed when he was pulled aside and told that Omaha and Covel had been attacked and that everyone on the base and on the colony was dead, and that his daughter, best beloved, died alone and frightened, and far away from anyone that ever loved her. Jared held Babar while the barrier between his consciousness and Bhutan's memories crumbled, feeling Bhutan's grief and anger as if it were his own. This was it. This was the event that set him on the path to treason, the death of his daughter, his Zoe Jolie, his joy. Jared, helpless to guard against it, felt what Bhutan felt, the sick horror of unwillingly picturing his child's death, the hollow, horrible ache standing in that place in his life where his daughter had been, and mad, acidic desire to do something more than mourn. The torrent of memory racked Jared, and he gasped as each new thing hit his consciousness and dug in. They tumbled in too fast to be complete, or to be completely understood, the broad strokes of memory defining the shape of Bhutan's path. Jared had no memory of his first contact with the Oban, only a sense of release, as if making the decision freed him from a lingering sense of pain and rage. But he saw himself making a deal with the Oban for a safe haven in exchange for his knowledge of the BrainPal and consciousness research. The details of Bhutan's scientific work eluded him. The training they required to comprehend required pathways of understanding Jared simply didn't have. What he had were the memories of sensual experience, the pleasure in planning to fake his death and make his escape, the pain of separation from Zoe, the desire to leave the human sphere and start his work and create his revenge. Here and there in this cauldron of sensation and emotion, concrete memories winked like jewels. Data repeated across the memory field. Things to be remembered from more than one incident. Even then, some things still flickered in memory, but just out of reach. Knowing Zoe was the key to Bhutan's defection, but not knowing exactly why the key turned, and feeling the answer sway from his grasp as he reached for it, tantalizing and torturous. Jared turned away to focus on the nuggets of memory that were hard, solid, and within reach. Jared's consciousness circled one of these, a place name, roughly translated from a language spoken by creatures that didn't speak like humans. And Jared knew where Bhutan was. The front door to the apartment slid open, and Martin clambered through. He spotted Jared in Zoe's room and pushed over to him.
"Time to go, Durak," he said.
"Varley tells me Oban are on their way. They must have bugged the place. Stupid of me."
"Give me a minute," Jared said.
"We don't have a minute," Martin said.
"All right," Jared said.
He pushed out of the room, taking Babar with him.
"Now's not the best time for souvenirs," Martin said.
Shut up, Jared said. Let's go.
He pushed out of Bhutan's apartment without looking back to see if Martin was keeping up. Uptold Chatterjee was where Jared and Martin had left him. The Oban scout craft, hovering outside the hull breach, was new.
There are other ways out of this place, Jared said, as he and Martin huddled by Chatterjee's body.
The scout was visible at an angle, but it apparently hadn't spotted them yet.
Sure there are other ways, Martin said. The question is, can we get to any of them before more of these guys show up? We can take one of them if we have to. More, there's going to be a problem.
Where's your squad? Jared asked.
They're on their way, Martin said. We try to keep our movements outside the rings to a bare minimum.
A fine idea any other time but this, Jared said.
I don't recognize that ship, Martin said. It looks like a new type of scout. I can't even tell if it has weapons. If it doesn't, between the two of us, we might be able to take it out with our MPs.
Jared considered this. He grabbed Chatterjee and gently pushed him in the direction of the hull breach. Chatterjee slowly floated across the breach.
So far, so good, Martin said, when Chatterjee's body was halfway across the breach.
Chatterjee's body shattered as the projectiles from the scout craft blasted through his frozen body. Limbs twirled violently and then were shattered themselves as another volley coursed through the breach. Jared could feel the impact of the projectiles on the far wall of the corridor.
Jared felt a peculiar sensation, like his brain being picked. The scout's position shifted slightly.
Duck, Jared tried to say to Martin, but the communication didn't make it through.
Jared dug in his heel, grabbed Martin, and yanked him down as a fresh volley ripped through the corridor, shredding the hull breach wider and passing dangerously close to Jared and Martin. Bright orange blazed outside, and from his position, Jared could see the scout tilt wildly. From below the scout, a missile arced its way up and impacted on the scout's underside, cracking the scout in two.
Jared noted to himself that the Gamorreans did indeed shoot fire.
"We're sure a lot of fun," Martin said. "Now we'll get to spend a week or two in hiding while the Oban scour around looking for whoever blew up their ship. You've made our lives very interesting, Private. Now, time to go. The boys have shot up the tow rope. Let's get out of here before any more show up."
Martin scrambled up and over and then launched himself out of the breach, toward the tow cable hovering 5 meters beyond it. Jared followed, grabbing the cable with one hand and holding on for dear life, while Babar stayed clenched in the other. It was 3 days before the Oban stopped hunting for them.
"Welcome back," Wilson said, as he approached the sled and then stopped. "Is that Babar?"
"It is," Jared said, sitting in the sled with Babar secured in his lap.
"I'm not sure I even want to know what that's about," Wilson said.
"You do," Jared said. "Trust me."
"It has something to do with Bhutan?" Wilson said.
"It has everything to do with him," Jared said. "I know why he turned traitor, Harry. I know everything."
Chapter 10 One day before Jared returned to Phoenix Station, clutching Babar, the Special Forces cruiser Osprey skipped into the Nagano system to investigate a distress call sent by Skip Courier from a mining operation on Kobe. The Osprey was not heard from again. Jared was supposed to report in to Colonel Robbins. Instead, he stomped past Robbins' office and into General Matson's before Matson's secretary could stop him. Matson was inside and looked up as Jared walked in.
"Here," Jared said, thrusting Babar into the hands of a surprised Matson. "Now I know why I punched you, you son of a bitch!"
Matson looked down on the stuffed animal.
"Let me guess," he said. "This is Zoe Bhutan's, and now you've got your memory back."
"Enough of it," Jared said. "Enough to know you're responsible for her death."
"Funny,"
Matson said, putting Babar down on his desk.
"Seems to me that either the Array or the Oban are responsible for her death."
"Don't be obtuse, General," Jared said.
Matson raised an eyebrow.
"You ordered Bhutan here for a month. He asked to bring his daughter with him. You refused.
Bhutan left his daughter and she died. He blames you.
And you do too, apparently,
Mattson said. Jared ignored this.
Why didn't you let him bring her? He asked.
I'm not running a daycare, Private, Mattson said. I needed Bhutan focused on his work. Bhutan's wife was already dead. Who was going to take care of the girl? He had people at Covel who could do it for him. I told him to leave her there. I didn't expect that we'd lose the station and the colony and that the girl would die.
This station houses other civilian scientists and workers, Jared said. There are families here. He could have found or hired someone to watch Zoe while he worked. It wasn't an unreasonable request, and you know it. So really, why didn't you let him bring her?
By this time, Robbins, alerted by Mattson's secretary, had entered the room. Mattson twisted uncomfortably.
Listen, Mattson said. Bhutan was a top-flight mind, but he was a goddamn flake, especially after his wife died. Cheryl was a heat sink for the man's eccentricities. She kept him on an even keel. Once she was gone, he became erratic, particularly where his daughter was involved.
Jared opened his mouth. Mattson held up a hand.
I'm not blaming him, Private, Mattson said. His wife was dead. He had a little girl. He was worried about her. I was a parent, too. I remember what it's like. But that, topped with his own organizational issues, created problems. He was behind on his projects as it was. It's one of the reasons I brought him back here for the testing phase. I wanted him to be able to get work done and not be distracted. And it worked. We finished testing ahead of schedule, and things went so well that I gave the go-ahead to have him bumped up to the director level, which was something I wouldn't have done before the test phase. He was on his way back to Covel when it was attacked.
He thought you turned down his request because you're a pissant tyrant, Jared said.
Well, of course he did, Mattson said. That's Bhutan all over. Look, he and I never got along. Our personalities didn't mesh. He was high maintenance, and if it weren't for the fact he was a fucking genius, he wouldn't have been worth the trouble. He resented the fact that I or one of my people was always looking over his shoulder. He resented having to explain and justify his work. And he resented that I didn't give a shit if he resented it. I'm not surprised he thought it was just me being petty.
And you're saying it wasn't, Jared said.
It wasn't, Mattson said.
And then threw up his hands when Jared gave him a skeptical look.
Okay, look, perhaps our history of bad blood played a small role. Maybe I was less willing to cut him a break than I would be someone else. Fine. But my main concern was getting work out of him, and I did promote the son of a bitch.
But he never forgave you for what happened to Zoe, Jared said.
Do you think I wanted his little girl dead, Private?
Mattson said.
Do you think that I wasn't aware that if I had just said yes to his request, she'd be alive now? Christ. I don't blame Bhutan for hating me after that. I didn't intend for Zoe Bhutan to die, but I accept I bear a part of the responsibility for the fact she is dead. I said as much to Bhutan himself. See if that is in your memories.
It was.
Jared saw in his mind Mattson approaching him in his lab, awkwardly offering his condolences and sympathy. Jared recalled how appalled he felt at the fumbled words and their implicit suggestion that Mattson should be absolved of the death of his child. He felt some of the cold rage wash over him now, and had to remind himself that the memories he was feeling were from another person, about a child who was not his own.
He didn't accept your apology, Jared said.
I'm aware of that, Private,
Mattson said, and sat there for a moment before he spoke up again.
So, who are you now?
He asked.
It's clear you have Bhutan's memories. Are you him now? In your gut, I mean?
I'm still me, Jared said.
I'm still Jared Dirac, but I feel what Charles Bhutan felt. I understand what he did.
Robbins spoke up.
You understand what he did, he repeated.
Does that mean you agree with it?
His treason? Jared asked.
Robbins nodded.
No, I can feel what he felt. I feel how angry he was. I feel how he missed his daughter. But I don't know how he got from there to turning on all of us.
You can't feel it, or you don't remember it? Robbins asked.
Both,
Jared said. More memory was returning after his epiphany at Covel.
specific incidents and data from all parts of Bhutan's life. Jared could sense that whatever happened there had changed him and made him more fertile ground for Bhutan's life, but the gaps were still there. Jared had to keep himself from worrying about them,